Welcome everyone this morning. I've got the pleasure of introducing Benedict Ritter, who's works in a whole bunch of Apache projects, but in particular in Apache Commons. I've been a user of that library for many years and have been talking via email to Benedict, so it's good to finally meet you. So please tell us a bit more. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Benedict. This is actually my first Apache Con, although I've been involved at Apache for several years now. And so far, it has been an amazing experience. The second day was a bit hard. You can ask Christoph about that. We went out to the pub, and that didn't turn out well for me. So I'm going to talk about Apache Commons, and the talk is called Beyond String Utils, because I think String Utils is probably the class everybody knows from that project. But there is a lot more in Apache Commons. And I'm really thankful that you all came to my talk, because there are amazing other talks right now. So just let's get started. So who am I? I'm Benedikt Ritter. My Apache ID is britter@apache.org. I'm a member of the project management committee of the Apache project. I've been elected to be an ASF member last year. I like Scala, although I can't use it much in my career, in my business projects. But I think it's a beautiful language. Maybe Paul and I, we can have a discussion about that later. I consider myself to be a software craftsman, so if you're into software craftsmanship, just meet me after my talk and we can talk about that. If you're not into software craftsmanship, also meet me so I can convince you that it's a superior way to develop software. And I work as a consultant for Codecentric, which is a mid-sized consultancy in Germany. If you're interested in what I'm doing, you can follow me at Twitter. I usually only tweet technical stuff, just if you like. So I usually start my talks about Apache Commons with this little poll. Who has never heard of Apache Commons or has never used any of the libraries or classes? Yeah. So that's the same picture I see everywhere where I do this talk. So Apache Commons is really, really widespread, and there are analyzers over all the GitHub repositories where somebody analyzed what is used the most, and Apache Commons libraries are under the top 10, like 3 or 4 of them. Although not the most used library, the most used library is, I think, JUnit, which is a good thing, but yeah. So here's my agenda. I did all the beginner's mistakes on preparing a talk, so I rewrote it yesterday night. I just finished it last night. I have much too many slides, so I already put the last point into brackets. We'll see if we come to that. At first, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Apache Commons in general, what the project is about and how it is structured. And then I have some examples to show you that there is more than just string utils. So I have some examples from Commons Lang. Then a kind of younger library is Commons CSV for processing character-separated values files. Commons CLI is a library for parsing command line input. And maybe if we have some time left, I also talk about BNutils 2, which is a rewrite of the well-known BNutils library. And maybe we can talk about whether this is even a good idea to rewrite that, because with Java 9, reflection will become kind of difficult. Let's say it like that. If you're interested in that, just join the talk after my talk by Robert Scholte from the Maven project. He's going to talk about Java 9 and Maven. And at the end, there's room for question and answer, if you like. So who is this presentation for? Well, it's for JVM developers. So you can use the Commons libraries from Java, obviously. But you can also use it if you are using Groovy or Scala or Clojure or whatever JVM library. Usually they have interop with Java, so you can use those components in any JVM language. It is for beginners, intermediates, and pros. I think there's something in it for everybody. So if you're a pro Java hacker, maybe you'll find something anyway that you didn't know before. And of course, it's for potential contributors. So if you're thinking about becoming part of the ASF, becoming a committer or a contributor, and you think Apache Commons is a project that interests you and you want to start contributing, just meet me after my talk and I can give you some pointers. So why is this talk important? This is what I call Ritter's Law. Everything that's not part of our domain or our business logic has already been implemented by somebody much smarter than us. So we don't need to re-implement collections. We don't need to implement CSV parsing or XML parsing. Anything that's not our domain logic, that's not specific to our applications, it has already developed in Java, most of it. And there's also an extended law, which is everything that is not part of your domain logic or the crazy legacy system you need to integrate has already been implemented. So if you come to a problem, always think about, is that really part of my domain? Is that what I need to implement to solve my business problem? Or is this just infrastructure code? Because we developers, we tend to, we like these technical problems. We like to implement parsing of JSON files or whatever. But that's not our job. Our job is to solve business problems, usually. So libraries like Apache Commons and Google Guava and so on, always take a look at them and find out if there's something that helps you to solve your technical problems at hand. Okay, so let's dive into the Apache Commons project and how it is structured. Some history about the project. You all probably know the Jakarta project from the ASF, and there's sometimes some confusion about that. What is Jakarta? What is Jakarta Commons? What is Apache Commons? And Jakarta has been an umbrella project at the ASF for Java-based projects. So, for example, Tomcat was part of the Jakarta project at the beginning. But then the ASF noticed that this umbrella project, it wasn't a real community maintaining all this code. It was just a collection of sub-communities that had no interaction or little interaction. So they decided to split it up. So Tomcat became its own top-level project. And of course, Jakarta Commons evolved into what today is Apache Commons. And the funny thing is, Apache Commons still is an umbrella project. So you would think that we have the same problem again, that it's just a bunch of small components and people that don't have any interaction. But we pay attention to that. So we try to be a community maintaining several components and not just a bunch of sub-communities maintaining just one component. And I think that works out quite well. There are people who are just working on one component, but I, for myself, I work on everything that catches my eye. And yeah, so that's what is Apache Commons today. So, sorry. The charter of the Apache Commons project just says that the Apache Commons project should host various reusable Java components. But I have my own view on that. I have my own mission statement for the project. I think that Apache Commons should provide a platform for other ASF projects to come together and to collaborate and to share code. Because let's say you have the Ant project and you have the Maven project, and they both need to do compression somehow. They need to create JAR files, they need to create zip files. How do they share that code? There has to be a place for that. That's Apache Commons. We have Apache Commons Compress, which is a library for compression. And both the people from the ARN project and the people from the Maven project come together at Commons and share that code, which is awesome, I think. So if you're already in a Java-based Apache project and you have some code and think that could be useful for other projects as well, just come to our mailing list and we can discuss it. And it has happened quite a lot recently. For example, we have the Apache Commons RDF project, which is about the resource description framework. It's a standard from the Semantic Web. And several projects joined efforts to create a shared library defining Java interfaces and Java classes for RDF. Another example is Commons Crypto, which we will hear later. It's a crypto library. And the reusable components that our charter talks about, they are just a byproduct of that. So we come together, we think we need compression code, we write the compression code for ARN and for Maven, and then everybody else can use it as well. So it's just a byproduct. So there are three major parts in the Apache Commons project. There's Apache Commons proper, which you probably know from the well-known components lang and IO and math. We also, about proper, almost all components have had some releases. There are two or three that haven't had a release, but I don't think that it will take long, much longer for them to get their first release. So if you grab something from proper, there will always be a release, usually. Then we have the sandbox. It's just a playground for trying out new stuff. If you have an idea, just go to the sandbox, create your project, your component project, and you can try something out. It has become less relevant with the rise of GitHub, because today, if you just want to give something a try, you usually just create a repository at GitHub. You don't go through the hassle to create it at Commons. And then we have dormant, which is kind of an attic inside of Commons. So when we realize that components are not really useful anymore, we just move them there. They are still archived, so you can still get the code. You can still download binaries from them. But nobody is going to work on them anymore. The nice thing about Commons is that it is open for all ASF committers. So if you are already a committer for the ASF, you already have commit access to our repositories. So that's another point where we try to invite everybody to collaborate at our project. Would be nice if you could raise something on the mailing list that we know your intentions before you start to dig into the code. But yeah, that's how it works. Okay. The components. So this was the first organizational part. From now on, every slide will have some code. So lots of code examples. I'm going to talk about Apache Commons Lang. And you probably all know this code. So often, if you have a reference to a string, you want to know if it's not null and not empty. So what you can do is you can just check it. If my string is null and my string is the empty string, or my string is the empty string, then do some action. So this is repeated all the time if you don't have string utils. So string utils provides a method that just combines these two operations, checking for null and checking if it's empty. Yeah, probably. So that's pretty boring. I guess everybody knows that already and uses that already. So that's really helpful, right? You don't have to rewrite this is null and is empty every time. But be aware my craftsmanship advice, because I told you I like software craftsmanship. And an overuse of is not empty and is not blank, and this method, it may be a sign of code smells, such as primitive obsession or anemic domain model. Because the question is, if you have to check it all the time, everywhere around your code, you're probably using strings a lot to represent your domain. So maybe you should create classes that represent the concepts in your domain. Furthermore, often you have, like, let's say a customer class, and the customer class has getters and setters to set all the fields. And then you say, customer, give me your ID. So you say, get ID. And then you're not sure, is it null, is it empty? So you have to implement that check. But that's already a sign of bad code, because why could you create a customer with an empty ID? So just think about that when you use that. It should not be all over your code. It should just be at selected places where it makes sense. But that's just a side note. So let's go beyond string utils. Actually, there are quite a lot of other utils in Apache Commons that provide helpful methods like the one we saw before. So we have array utils to do stuff on arrays. Basically, on all the important classes in the Java lang package, we have enum utils to work on enumerations. We have exception utils to work on exceptions and their stack traces. We have random string utils that can come in handy in testing. If you need just a random string, use that one. We have something that helps you with serialization, and we will hear later why that's not such a good idea. So don't use serialization. But if you really have to, you can have a look at serialization utils. There are system utils to access all the properties defined in the system class. Thread utils, which help you to filter thread groups and threads. And word utils, which is kind of a util that works on texts. So not only strings, but it can detect words for you and stuff like that, and break lines. And we realized that, for example, word utils, it may not really fit into Commons lang, because it's more than just working on strings. It's working on the concept of texts. And for that reason, we just created Commons text, which is in the sandbox right now, and is a component doing all sorts of computation on texts. So let's have a look at one of the utils. One of the utils I really like and that almost nobody knows is system utils. And it provides very, very easy access to all the properties, the standard properties that are defined within the JVM. So usually you would have to go to system and then get property. Then you have to know the name of the property, for example, java.home. And that will return you the path to the Java home. You could do it like that. You could also just use system utils and use the constant we defined there for you. So this constant is just the value of calling system.getProperty Java home. If you need a file object, you can use the static method on system utils to create to get a file object from that path. The next thing that's pretty cool is the Java version enum, because sometimes you might want to know, am I running on Java 6, am I running on Java 7, am I running on Java 8? And you can do that using Java version. There is an enum field for every Java version that's out there. And then you ask system utils, is Java version at least the version I have at hand? So why is that helpful? Because you may want to implement a check, for example, in your unit tests. I just recently had to do that for the Surefire project, because there are some features in Surefire that don't work on Java 7, but you want to test them on Java 8. If the test is running on Java 8, you want to execute that test, and if it's not running on Java 8, you don't want to execute that test. For that, you can just define a helper method. Let's call assume at least. And you say assume at least Java 1.7, and you can just run your test on Java 7. And what this method will do, it will use the assume true method to check against the Java method. Assume true, do you know how it works? It will check this Boolean value, evaluate that expression, and if it's false, it will throw in a specific exception so that the JUnit framework knows it doesn't have to execute this method. So you can say, let's say I'm running on Java 7. If that's true, then I do something. If not, I'm not doing anything because it doesn't make sense for me. Okay, pretty straightforward, I think. Something else I really like is the various builders we have in the builder package. So there are some common methods defined in a Java lang object, like toString equals hash code and an extend compare to if you implement comparable. And it's a bit tedious in Java to implement those methods. So there are builder classes that help you generate the value. So here's an example of how to implement equals using equals builder for a class, a person class. So this is the usual boilerplate you have when you implement equals. If the other object is null, it's obviously not equal to myself because I'm not null. If the other object is this, then I'm checking against myself so I can return true. And if the other object has another class than I have, then it can't be me because the classes are different. So after that, I know that the object that has been passed into this method is of class person, if this is inside the person class, so I can cast that object to person. And this is the equals builder magic from Commons. You just create the builder, and then you can append values to it. So you say, append this name and that name, append this age and that age, and then you just ask it, is it equals? So why is that handy? Because usually you would have to check on both sides if one of them is null, if they are nullable. I talked about that earlier. Maybe it's not a good idea to make everything nullable. But usually if your fields are nullable, you have to check, is my field null? Then is the other field null? If it's not null, is it equals? And that leads to pretty much boilerplate code. So this is a way to get hands on that boilerplate code. If you're using Groovy or Scala, you don't have to implement that at all because they do it for you. But if you're still working with Java, that may be handy. Also, there is a builder for toString, which works quite the same. You just create a new toString builder and append all the fields you want to have in your toString representation. And the cool thing about toString builder is that it has different styles. So for example, there is a JSON style that will render the fields as a JSON structure. It's not a fully fledged JSON serialization framework like, say, JSON or JSON. But if you just need an easy way to create a JSON representation, that might be for you. And there are also reflective versions of those builders. And again, we don't know if they will work on Java 9. Probably not. Yes. So that were the builder classes. Now another class I really like is from the text package, and that's the str substitutor, or let's say string substitutor, because it's a little easier to pronounce. And that is a convenient way to to do substitutions inside of a string. You can think of it as a little template engine in just one class. So let's say you want to give out some debug information about your application, where you print out values of system properties. You could do it like this. You just use a static method on the string substitutor, replace system properties, and then you put the system properties in curlies with a dollar sign, and it will replace it for you if it has a replacement for that value. So for example, java.version is a property defined in the JVM, so it will query for that property and replace it inside that string. The string builder is fully customizable, so you don't need to use the dollar curly brace for marking your keys inside your string. But it has reasonable defaults, and I think dollar curly brace is pretty well known for template strings, so why not use that? But you can customize it if you want. You can even fully customize that, so you don't have to use system properties, because that may not always make so much sense. Maybe you want to generate, let's say, an email text or something with the name of the customer or whatever. Then you could create a map. I'm using the singleton map method from the collections class in Java to create a map that just has one entry, the custom key, and it has a value, which is some value. And then I create a new string substitutor and pass that map into that substitutor, and then I can let the substitutor replace the values. And the nice thing is, if you know this, this is a bash syntax for fallback values. Colon dash, you can put a fallback value in bash shell scripts. And that does also work here, because above, I've only defined the custom key, which I use here. As you can see, the dollar signs are missing here. Sorry about that. The custom key, that will replaced with some value in the result. But I don't have a value for another. So there is no another key in that map. So it's using the fallback value. Pretty handy, I think. So you don't always need a free marker or velocity or whatever. If it's just a little tiny thing you want to implement, maybe it's enough to just use the string substitutor instead. If you have been at the keynote this morning, in Ruby you wouldn't need that at all. But yeah, we're in Java, so we need to do that. And there is so much more in Common Lang. We have mutable variants of the primitive wrapper types. So the integer class, it is immutable once created. But we have the mutable integer. So you have an integer where you can set the value after creation. We have mutable and immutable pairs and triples. You might know them from other programming languages. It's always a question whether it's a good idea to use such generic container types. There are people saying, okay, if I have a pair of a list which contains triples, what is that? Why isn't that a full object? So always think about that when you use classes like that. We have the contexted runtime exception, which is really nice if you want to report some context to a failure, because often in your code, you are down below at the very bottom and you need to read a file, and at that point, there's some error occurring. So what you usually do is catch IO exception, log error, error. Okay, nobody knows what has happened. So what I think is a better approach is create a exception that has some context, a runtime exception at best. Put the information that you have down below what is going wrong. For example, I don't know, the file is not readable or the file system is not ready or whatever. Put that into that exception and throw it, the whole stack up, up into some layer where you can process that information, for example, by showing a nice window to the user saying, sorry, we can't process your request currently. If you just log it into the log, nobody will know what's going on. So That's a nice way to transport that information from down below to up to the bottom. And we have classes for text translation and escaping. So, for example, if you want to escape XML, there's an XML escaper. We have stuff for reflection. We have some classes that help you with arithmetic operations, although there's Commons Math, a big library just for this kind of things. We have classes for concurrency. Just take a look. Don't reinvent the wheel. So last words about Commons Lang. What about Commons Lang and Java 8 and Java 9? The last release we pushed out 2 months ago or something is Lang 3.4. It requires Java 6. Java 6 is EOL by Acrobat only. Oracle, sorry. Only if you have this subscription model, you will get some updates. So we don't consider this to be really relevant anymore. So for the next release, which is 3.5, we will require Java 7. We are probably one of the last open source libraries that has still been on Java 6. So I think Java 7 is reasonable at the time. And we have already discussed Java 8 because Java 7 does not really bring so many features that help you to build APIs for your users. We could use it to do some cleanup internally, for example, using multi-catch blocks or the switch over strings, but we can't really use Java 7 features to create new APIs. So we discussed this a long time. Does it really make sense to go to Java 6? Shouldn't we already go to Java 8 and build something for Java util function and Java time packages? But we consider this to be a too hard move. So we don't know. Maybe we'll go to Java 8 after 3.5. Maybe we just require Java 8 for Commons Lang 4, so the next big major release. But we haven't really started to implement on that. So if you're running on Java 7, you'll be safe for the next years, I guess. and then Java 9 comes around. The build already works, but you have to pass a flag to the compiler because we have some problems with locales. As I showed you before, we have locale utils and we have some classes working on the old date RP, and they are highly locale dependent and time zone dependent. And in Java 8, Oracle introduced a new local data provider, which is some kind of standard for this information. And in Java 8, it was just an opt-in, so you could activate it if you like. In Java 9, it has become the default, and because the data, the local data, is different from the way it was before, our tests are failing. So we need to figure out if we do it with the Java version I showed before, or if we just switch everything to the new local provider, or if we implement it in our Maven build that we always use the old one. We just have to discuss that. Okay, so that was short intro into Commons Lang. Now a component I really, really like a lot, Commons CSV, which is about character separate value files. And character separated value files, they are still a pretty common data exchange format. In my latest project, which is really bleeding edge. We use Spring Boot, we use Angular 2 in the front end, we deploy everything in Docker containers to Kubernetes, and we still have to integrate a legacy system that's giving us CSV files. So usually you often hear CSV, we don't need a library for this, that's just a split at the comma. It's easy as that. Yeah, well, let me ask you, who of you has already implemented his own CSV parser? Yeah. Yeah, the problem is, at first, it seems to be that easy because there are just commas and line breaks, but then you get those crazy files from these other systems that have other line break characters that have quoting, that have escape characters where you can escape the delimiter. And all of a sudden, this easy split at the comma becomes a mess. So although it is standardized in the RTF 4180, there are a lot of variants out there. And that's the problem with CSV. So I already told you, CSV variants, they may differ in a lot of aspects. For example, there may be different delimiter characters. There may be different line break sequences. There may be quoting or not. There may be escaping. They may have headers or not. And yeah, the split becomes a nightmare. And the funny thing about that is, for example, XML, it is a complex standard. I think the specification has like 500 pages, but, sorry?
XML has 500
pages. The specification, I think. Maybe you read the summary or something. It's pretty complex, but it's pretty clear what is XML and what is no XML. And that's not true for CSV. So there was an ongoing effort to implement something at Commons that helps you to work with CSV files. And that eventually got released as Commons CSV. And we have some predefined formats for you. For example, there is a format that's created by Microsoft Excel when you export a spreadsheet as CSV. MySQL has its own CSV style. TDF is a tabular delimited format, so they're not using commas, but tabs. And of course, there's what is defined in the RTF 4180. And parsing a file is as simple as I've shown you there. You just read the file so that you have a reader, and then you use the constant defined on the CSV format. Let's say this is an Excel export, so I say Excel pass in, and that will give me an iterable of CSV records. And this iterable, each record is, you can think about it as a logical line in that file, because if you have quoting and stuff like that, it may be possible that you have line breaks inside your CSV file, but they are not record line breaks. So the record will really have what is one line. And then you can access the record values or the column values, for example, by their header name. So in this case, we have auto-detected the header. We use the first line as the header. And if there is a column in the first row with the value last name, then I can access the values of all the coming records by this name. You can also access them by index. And I'm going to show you on one of the later slides that there are other options to do that as well. So this is pretty handy, but still you have the crazy legacy system that produces something that's completely different from Excel and MySQL and stuff like that. For this reason, there's a builder built inside the format where you can customize your format. So let's say I have a format that's kind of like the RTF, but it uses a semicolon as delimiter, as separator, sorry. So let's just say I need RTF 4180 with separator semicolon. And then my format also has a header, so I define this header. Although it's not in the file, I know that these are the logical columns, so I can also pass logical names for that column. So the first column will be accessible via customer name, the second column will be accessible via name, and so on. And my format may also have some empty lines, and I want the reader to ignore them. So I just set ignore empty lines to true. That's already pretty cool, I think. So there's really not much you can't do with that. You can just customize the format. And you can even start a new format from scratch, so you don't need to use the RTF as a base for that. You can just say, give me a new format which has this delimiter. That's the only information we need. If you have a delimiter, we can read it for you. So what I like, I just implemented that recently, is you can also, I don't like to have string values and string constants all around my code, so I usually try to define enumerations for that. So I think if I have a file that has some headers, there should be an enumeration defining those headers. So I create an enumeration called header, and I say there's an enum value called customer no, there's an enum value called name, there's an enum value called first name, and one for birthday. And then I can say, create me a CSV format from RTF4180 with the values of this header enum class. And what it will do, it will use the two-string representation of the header values to define the header. And then the nice thing is, when I go over my records, I can use the enum values to access CSV record values. And that's pretty clean, I think. You see, above here we have the underscore. In the example, the last example I had, there was a space inside my header name. So if you want to do that with the enum solution, you will have to implement two string for this one enum value, which is possible for Java enums, as you know. Okay, so conclusion about common CSV. Seemingly simple tasks can become quite complex, and as you've seen in the poll, we've all violated Ritter's law and implemented our own CSV parser, and we should not do that because we should solve business problems. So if you have to parse CSV next time, just give it a try. It's pretty easy, it's customizable, and it's pretty fast. But it has some limitations. You can also use it for printing, but the printing support does not support all the options we have. We support when we read in files. So, for example, for printing, we don't support crazy line break characters. When reading a record, you could define an exclamation mark as your line break record. When printing, that doesn't work. That will just print a new line. There is no type conversion support currently, so you always get a string because the file contains strings. We don't convert that. And what has come up quite often is the support for mapping data directly into objects, so kind of a CSV mapping framework. We haven't done anything in that direction, and I don't think that we will do that because that's quite complicated. So, yeah, looking at the time, I don't think we will have a look into bnutils too, but I think I can show you something about Commons CLI. So what is the motivation for the Commons command line parser? You know, what I really want when I write a little command line tool, I want something like this from Maven. Isn't it beautiful? You say Maven help and you get this whole help dialogue explaining all the stuff you can do with the Maven command line, but what I get from Java is this. An array of strings. Come on. Now I have to implement that all myself. I have to check, has anybody really passed me some arguments or not? And if somebody has passed me arguments, is the first argument minus help? Okay, then I should really print the help. And then there are all the other options. I mean, you saw how many options there are in Maven. You just have to implement a huge block of code to go through all the arguments and pass them. So it doesn't have to be that hard. And again, that's probably not part of our domain problem to implement this parsing. So why not use Commons CLI? It's quite simple. You just say, okay, my program has some options, and I want to add a simple option, which has a shortcut, which is just an H, and it has a long a long name, which is help. It doesn't take any arguments, and the description for this command is display the help. And you can even create more complex options. For example, I have an option which where the short name is just an L. The long option name is log file. It has an argument. The name of the argument is file. That's for the help output. And it also has a description, use given file for log. And then I can build that option and add it to my options object. And parsing the command line is then as simple as this. I just create a default parser with the options and the args array. And I can ask the line if it has the option help. And if that's true, I can use the help formatter to just print all the help for all the options because I have defined them in my options object. And if not, I can ask it, has it a file option? Then I work on the file option. For example, by assigning it to a field or do whatever I want. So I don't have to do this nasty string interpretation stuff on the string array. I can just let CLI do that. And I've implemented that yesterday. It looks like that. So it's pretty much what we've seen in the Maven example, right? It's very straightforward and yeah. So looking at the time, there are only 5 minutes left. I think I'm going to skip bNewtils 2 and just come to some final words. These were just a handful of the components we have at the Apache Commons project. There's so much more. So there's nearly a solution for every technical problem, I'd say. So if you need to do something with different codecs, have a look at Commons Codec. By the way, this is the way we name our components. They always have the name that indicates what they are for. So if you have to do something with codecs, you could look at Commons Codec. If you have to do something with crypto stuff, look at Commons Crypto. We have imaging for processing image files. But remember, this is all running on Java. So you have, if you have the image as a byte array, for example, you always have the index checks. So working on images will never be as fast as doing it, for example, with C or C++, where you can just ignore all that stuff that JVM does for you. We have pool, which is an object pooling library, RDF, I already told about that. And one of the newcomers is Commons RNG. So if you're interested in random number generators, this project may be for you. Just come to our website. They're all listed there. Come to our mailing list. Join us. You're welcome. And yeah. If there are any questions, I will answer them now.
Thanks for the presentation. I would like to ask you something about the documentation of the library.
Yeah.
Usually, when you provide this kind of utils, I think it's quite important to know if what is the threat safety behavior of the different components. And at least for me, sometimes I think the documentation is difficult to follow, and usually you need to go to the code and figure out if the component is thread safe or not. Is there any kind of hint just to know that?
Without looking at the code, actually. There's usually we add it as a Java comment at the top of the class, but that doesn't really help you when you are programming. You don't want to dig into the code. You want to see it right away, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think there is some very little library that has some annotations for that. Maybe we should think about adding them, or maybe we should just define them ourselves so we can generate it into the Java doc. That would pretty much help you, right? So if we had an annotation that could be directly mapped into the Java doc, you would already see is it thread safe or not.
Yeah, or maybe this, annotations or similar to what I is doing, this is immutable, this is thread safe, this is whatever. I think that's quite helpful for the users of the library.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm taking that with me. So I'll just bring it up on the mailing list and then we'll see.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for the feedback.
I have a question regarding Binyotil's copy properties.
Sorry?
I have a question regarding Binyotil's copy properties.
Ah, okay, yeah.
And you probably know the Spring implementation. I have read some articles that the Spring implementation is much faster than the Apache one. And do you think about moving to the Spring solution? What are your plans? And also the option to exclude some properties.
Just for the copy properties part or the whole Binutils? Because I think the Spring framework has a Spring Binutils class itself, right?
I've mostly used the Binutils copy properties. And
okay, so your question is just about the copy properties method and whether we think about moving to the Spring implementation.
Okay.
Is that the question?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, we are not thinking about that. Binutils is a quite old component, probably one of the oldest components, and there's not really much effort going into it because there's just nobody who's really into it right now. Because you maybe know we are just volunteers, so we work on whatever we like to work on. But if you're interested in improving the performance, why just join the mailing list and bring that up on the mailing list. If you have a patch for that, we will apply it, and yeah.
Okay, thank you.
More questions?
No more questions? Okay, let's thank Benedict one last time for his very informative talk. Thanks, Benedict.
Thank you.